Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 124th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During the show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. Today, my guest is Pedagé Muhammariza, who is a young man from Bukavu in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. He grew up as the youngest of eight children in his family. Pedagé came here in 2015, already fluent in English, in order to study. Welcome to New Mainers Speak, Pedagé.
Thank you, Kate.
So your mother stayed home to raise the eight of you, and your father was the leader of your tribe called Benyamulenge. What was that like growing up, the youngest son of a tribal leader?
I'd say pretty much the same as other kids around me. I think, like I mentioned to you early, the fact that we grew up in an environment that wasn't very friendly to us kind of gave us a sense of purpose, and we wanted to do better and well in school, better than other kids. That was, I think, that was the value that was instilled in us from a younger age.
Yeah, the Benyamulenge people are treated as second-class citizens in the region. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it is fair to say that. There's some other minorities, too, who are not really advocated for in my country. But Banyamulenge, it is fair to say that my people were subject to many discrimination attacks. Yeah.
Yeah. So what was expected of you that might have been different from other kids performing in school? You were saying earlier, too, that you would come home from school and there would be maybe 20 people in your living room. That's a little unusual.
It was. Back then, I didn't understand it. But now that I'm able to look back at it, I'm actually grateful for that. It was the fact that my father, who's the tribal leader of Banyamulenge, he was known. Most people who came from the village where I was born and making their transition to the urban place, They didn't know much of the place except the people, and they kind of knew my father. They knew my father well, and when they asked who we might go to when we get there, it was always my father and other people who were living there. But it was kind of unusual to receive 15 or 20 people in one day. And being a kid, I didn't really appreciate that, but now I'm really thankful for that.
So your parents together really served the community. I imagine your mother was hosting these people that came by and raising her eight children.
She did. She did well. She did. I'll say she did perfect, and she never complained once. I remember I used to complain a lot. Like we should probably move from this place to another place. But she was just like, you know, people are wealth. It's all about people. It's never about one individual. It's all about people. This is what your father is doing. This is what I'm doing. This is what we ought to do as a family.
That's beautiful and very clear.
Thank you.
How did you get the name Pedagé? Can you tell us what that is? What that means en français?
Oh, yeah. PDG stands for Président Délégué Général, which translates to CEO in English, I guess. And it's fair to say that my father had all these hopes and still have a hope, these hopes for me, these high hopes and high expectations. And back then, where he was living in a village somewhere very far from Bukavu, I think it would have sounded crazy for him to just say, "I'm hoping my kid becomes a CEO someday." So the only way for him to keep that that energy was through my name. So he named me Pedagé, with a hope of me becoming someone important someday.
You were born a president, director general. I love that. So can you describe for us what the average person's income is like in Eastern Congo, and what kinds of things can people generally afford to do and not afford to do there?
The average, it's totally different from what we have here. The average person will usually make, it depends, $200, $300 a month. And I've seen people, I know people who made that money and were able to sustain their families because they thought it was fair for them. And one of the misfortune of the poverty is the fact that you don't know that you're receiving less than you should. So people who made 200 or 300 or 400 a month, we 7, 6, 8, 9 kids to feed. They still thought it was fair, but it is not. So I've always said to my friends that flossing, as trivial as it looks, it is luxury. Because growing up, we didn't have that. That was
something. Flossing your teeth.
Flossing your teeth.
Yeah,
can you imagine that? And it costs maybe one piece, probably costs $5. But we still thought it was luxury, you know, to have that. You could afford maybe food to feed two times a day, but not much. You cannot afford much with 200 or 300. You can't buy a car. People who had cars, it was and still is luxury to have a car in my country.
Yeah. In the village where you grew up, were there cars?
No. I didn't grow up in a village. I was born in a village, but I moved when I was a kid. I was a baby, but they didn't have roads until recently, probably in 2008, I think. And it's a small road. You probably like a bike roads here, bike lanes. So it was we didn't have cars in my village.
Yeah. So Eastern Congo is known for its mineral resources, and it's one of the richest places on earth for soil and for the minerals below the ground. Yet it is the poorest country in the world. Is that right?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, and 63% of people from your home area live in poverty, and you said, if not more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so... But interesting point, when everyone's living in poverty, you don't realize you don't have as much as you need.
You don't. That's right, Kate. You don't. You think it is the way it's supposed to be, you know. And I'll say that the fact that we have all those minerals, it's the misfortune that we have. We probably would have been better off, you know. And It gives me, I'm angry every time I think about it because people settle for less than they deserve, you know. But now that I'm here, I'm probably able to see it from a different perspective, and you see that if there's something to be done about it, then we should do something. As little as it might look, we better do something. Take one step at a time.
Yeah, because poverty really changes lives. And I wondered if you could speak to what poverty does to people from what you've observed in Bukavu, in Rwanda, and here in the United States. I know that you volunteer at Oxford Street Shelter as well. And I wonder how poverty looks different in different places.
Poverty does a lot to people. In a case of where I grew up, it was it creates a an atmosphere of skepticism, you know, and people don't trust each other, you know. You know that your neighbors is living under the same situation, but because you're looking for someone to blame, you're always saying that, hey, the fact that I'm making this less is my neighbor's fault, and this specific tribe. So it kind of puts an iron curtain between people, you know. You're not able to see that common thing between you, that is poverty, but you think you're different despite the poverty.
Are you saying when your needs aren't met, then you're more likely to turn on other people to try to get whatever you need?
Yeah, when I think we should be blaming maybe the government because how corrupt it is and other factors of the country, we rather blame each other, you know, because we're sharing so little that we think if I can kick him out, if I can kick this Banyamulenge out, then I might be able to keep this for myself, mm-hmm. you know. But that can never be the case because we had to fight back when we were like 2004, we were kicked out of the country and we came back. I came back the same year with my family, but I still saw this discrimination, and I know for a fact that it's all due to poverty. You know, it's all the product and fruits of the poverty. Yeah,
I appreciate you tying those two ideas together. That's a step forward for my understanding. You are listening to WMPG, and if you're just joining us, welcome. This is New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Pedaje Muhammadreza. Pedaje is currently studying political science at University of Southern Maine. Pedaje, can you tell us about your dreams for the future and how a degree in political science might fit into your plan?
The reason I decided to major in political science is because I wanted to be able to attend law school. So, like I mentioned earlier, 2004, there was a massacre against my people in Burundi, and that time 166 people died, kids and women and men. There was this man from Burundi who was a political man. His name is Agathon Rwasa, and one of his associate, I'll say, said in public that that he would take the blame for whatever happened, that he was responsible for the killings of Banyamulenge. So back then I didn't really pay attention because I was a kid, but now that I'm growing up, and he gave me something to hold on to, like if I can get this low degree, then I might be able to face him in the future. And if not that, if his case is solved before I get my law degree, there's still so many issues that I might be able to tackle in the future. So that's why I decided to major in political science and later go to law school.
What other things do you think you might like to study while you're here, you know, focusing on political science? Are there other topics that you want to take in so that you might take that back to
your people? I love music.
Music?
I love music, and I just don't have time or the means now to study music, but I would like to take a few lessons in music and maybe filmmaking.
Ah.
Yeah.
Well, that could be helpful too, and
could be
promoting and
never know. Yeah.
You know, getting the word out about Banyamulenge people.
Yeah.
About how many tribes live in the region where you were educated? You said there are kids from all different tribes in your school. Are there 5? Are there 20?
I can't be able to say the exact number, but many people, I say, many different tribes. People you call Bashi, Balega, and Bafuliro, Babembe. There's a lot of people actually, and those are the people that we share the most in the region. Those are the people that we kind of interact on a daily basis.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So we don't hear much, if anything, about what happened in the massacre in 2004 that you brought up earlier here. It's not on our news. And I wondered, when people hear things like this, there are massacres and people being excluded from public goods and not being given rights to land, what can anyone do from here? How can people help from here? You, as a citizen of that country, and other people who care, is there a way to contribute or to help or to understand more?
I think putting an emphasis on the fact that education is a powerful tool that we can use to change the mentality in my country and other countries in Africa, I mean all over the world. Emphasizing that is the most important thing, in my opinion. Supporting causes of education and financing schools in my country, I think that is the only way we're going to be able to change the mentality and the situation that is in my country.
And to establish some common ground, I would think.
Yeah,
You had mentioned when we spoke at the cafe last week that, you know, language, when you've all come from different tribes, language can be a barrier. Kids who get to go to school all learn French then as their common denominator. Mm-hmm. But kids who don't go to school don't. And then you can't come in and explain things to people in one language.
Yeah, because there's the barrier of morphology, you know. As petty as it sounds, people look at each other in a different way when they have a different morphology in my country, and that's unfortunate. But at least when you have that common language, you're able to talk to each other and to say, hey, it's not about the morphology, it's not about the physical features, it's about what you have in your mind and what you might be able to contribute for a better cause.
Yeah. So you made a great point when we visited earlier that most New Mainers will stay here in the state, but not all of them will, and that everyone could use a warm welcome and support on their journeys while they're here. I wonder what kinds of things and offerings you have found that have been helpful to you since your arrival in Maine last year.
I think the reason why, I first talk about the reason why people decide to stay here, most people you meet from Africa or from other countries, other troubled countries, they come here because they seek refuge, and these are the people who felt at some point of their lives felt betrayed by their own nations. So when you come here and they give you the identity, when that gives you a sort of identity, like you know you belong to a place, you never want to go back, you know. But hopefully that will change. You know, people will feel like, hey, even though we were rejected in our own countries, this is our own problem to fix. You know. So going back to your question, one of the offerings that I found in America is no dream is too big to dream, you know. The fact that people can give you an opportunity to talk about your dreams and to follow your dreams and to tackle your ambitions, I think it's all we need, you know. It's all we need, the ability to achieve big and to give back to our community. That's what we need, and that's what we are being given today in America.
And do you dream differently once here than you did when you were in Congo?
I never changed my dreams. When I was a kid, though, I used to dream about becoming a musician, Now he sort of changed, you know. I decided to go for a bigger fish, which is fixing the scourge of discrimination and poverty in my country.
That's kind of a big thing to tackle.
It is, you know, but it's worth it.
So, for a young man, you seem quite aware that your good fortune is due to the sacrifices of others. I wonder if you could give us an example of how that's worked in your life.
A perfect example in my case is my mother. I know for a fact that she has broken dreams. And she has broken dreams because of me, because of my siblings. And right now, it's safe to say that her dreams now are my dreams. For my dreams to become reality, that's what she dreams about. Seeing me becoming successful, seeing me getting where I want to be, it's all she dreams about. And that made a big impact in my life, knowing that someone is ready to give up everything for you. That changed, that impacted me a great deal.
What dream did she have that she set aside to parent?
She never really talks about it, but I can tell that she probably want to. She didn't go to college. That's the thing. She didn't even go to high school, you know. So I know that it is because she had a lot of kids, you know, a family to sustain. So she at one point she mentioned to me that that education is so important. I was like, why do you think education is important? She was like, I know it is important. I can see where things are going right now. I can see where things. I'm a grown woman. I know. I've seen things in the past, and I know that education is important. So the fact that she knows that education is important, I'll assume that she would have wanted to be educated, you know. But she couldn't because she had me, she had my siblings, you know.
And the next best thing is having you live the dream.
Yeah, I think me living the dream would be her living the dream.
Yeah, I'm sure it would. So hopefully part of your dream will be to become a lawyer and go back there and help fix the poverty. And I bet she'll be pretty glad to see you too.
Yeah, we other many kids and other people are dreaming of fixing something in our country. I'm sure we can do something about it.
Yes, yeah. I hope so. Pedaje, you are very motivated and hardworking and incredibly loyal to your family and your country. I expect your family and community will be very glad to have you come home when you've completed your education here. And I think we're lucky to have you here in the meantime so we can learn from you. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you for having me, Kate. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak about some of the issues in my country.
That's
Thank you.
Lovely. I'm Kate Manahan in the studio with my guest, Pedaje Muhammariza. Would you be so kind as to tell us a little bit about the song you've selected to close today's program?
Oh, that's a song by a guy. He's Ismaël Lô. That's in French. He's from Senegal, and he's I just admire his message of solidarity in his music. That's why I picked the song, and he's a great artist.
And the song is called?
It's the one down there, Ismaël Africa, not Jammu Africa, the other one.
Oh, can you click on it?
Sure.
Oh, that one, okay, I'll get it for you. Oh, good, I called the wrong one up. Get this going on. Great, so Ismaël, Jammu Africa, what's Jammu?
The meaning of Jammu?
Yes.
I honestly don't know. It's probably from a dialect in Senegal.
Oh, because he's Senegalese, so, right?
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
Great. So this mixes your love of music and your love of your home.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks. Africa! Africa, mon Afrique,
gendegi magi nyanya lawan moko balame nyibi bansa mane betu nyak si besi Afrika don penereu ici ou d'ailleurs nous sommes des enfants d'Afrique même si le ciel tombé luttons pour la paix kon jamu Afrika mom la ñaan mané jamu Afrika moy suñu natangé
Yo ado ado jam to Casablanca, la ulmi jona.